Science is the aperture through which we view reality in regards to making developmental changes to society. And so we have to speak the language of science, even if the roots of the actual practice are in mysticism and spirituality, which they are. That's the funny thing. The practices themselves, in order to have this type of contact, whatever it really may be, are predominantly rooted in spiritual, mystical, esoteric practices. And many times will borrow from extremely ancient traditions, reading ancient Sanskrit, doing puja ceremonies, invoking old traditions and old methods of spirituality to see something and to experience something that's beyond our understanding of what could be real, the paranormal, beyond normal. And it's certainly real. It's certainly real. It's very difficult to explain in terms of actually trying to rationalize the practices or why it truly works. And that's what I've really explored over the years, as much as I can, is to find explanatory avenues for why this really works. And I think that we're in a very interesting time period for that, because we're actually coming to a point in science where these ideas about, let's say, psychic abilities, extrasensory perception, telepathy, telekinesis, remote viewing, and the ability to initiate a form of contact with other intelligences, these are all beginning to find some level of empirical anchor into the scientific foundations of our society, beginning to fine-tune our understanding of our microcellular architecture, because this is one of the arenas where we're beginning to discover just how much power is actually within us. Deep down on the very, very small microcellular scale of our anatomy, within the neurological architecture of the brain, the microtubular interfaces on the neurons of our brain. These are elements that are now being explored and understood by science in a way that feels almost mystical and spiritual, because they're invoking quantum consciousness, the idea that consciousness itself is part of the quantum field, and that this is just an instrument, a fine-tuned antenna and receiver and renderer of consciousness, which is just everywhere in the ether. It's a very spiritual proposition, you know, it's the mind of God. You know, you're saying consciousness is everywhere. Consciousness is part of the fundamental substrate upon which reality manifests itself. That's where we're getting in science, that's where we're coming to. And all of it sounds extremely spiritual. And I examine it through the lens of my own experiences. I had these interactions with orbs. I had this contact with these orbs. And it only occurred because I was getting into these states of consciousness, peaceful, loving, energetic states of consciousness. And again, people want to roll their eyes at that because it's like, oh, what does that mean? You know, your woo-woo energies, you unlock your heart and you project your true rainbow spirit out into the universe. You know, that's, I know that people see it like that. I get it. I actually really get it. Because I'm not, like, as much as I consider myself to be a morally aligned person, I'm not some lovey-dovey hippie guy, right? It's just not really me. I've got a bit of an edge. And so I understand when people are like, oh, what, you're just, you know, firing out your heart beams into the universe? No, like, the thing is, when you start to understand this on a bioenergetic, biophysical level, you start to realize that, yes, one side of it sounds really spiritual and woo-woo and magic, but the scientific exploration of our own body is revealing that our body is capable of generating and maintaining quantum scale effects. And consciousness itself is beginning to be entertained as a quantum entangled field phenomena that we're just immersed within. Now, all of that begins to allow us to explain the woo-woo magic, use your heart, you know, send love into the universe. Because what you're actually doing when you're sending love into the universe, if you're legitimately feeling that feeling and you're like, oh, it's pouring out of me. Well, what you're actually doing is you're activating your bioelectrochemical system. You're increasing the amplitude of electromagnetic energy being generated by the heart and by the brain. For anyone who may not know this, that's an established scientific fact. The heart generates actually the strongest electromagnetic field out of the heart and the brain. And then the brain also generates one, roughly 3 feet in diameter around your whole body, like a bubble, being passively generated at all times. This electromagnetic energy, because we're energetic electric beings. We have piezoelectric collagen matrices. We have electromagnetic pulses. We have a neural circuitry that's constantly buzzing with real electricity. So we're energetic beings, not just on the, you know, woo-woo spiritual sense, but we're energetic beings on a very empirically, scientifically evidenced sense. And that's where these things start to meet. That's where the woo-woo, right? The annoying woo-woo stuff and the science, they're beginning to connect. And that's the point. It's not about me standing on a pedestal and going, you don't get it, you just gotta use your heart. Nope. And it's also not me trying to give you a full-blown explanation of what's possible with consciousness, but it is me saying to you, I've had these experiences with these orange orbs only happened because I was out in my garden getting into a purposeful state of consciousness, a deliberate state of consciousness, raising my emotional energy, raising my mental energy, and visualizing or imagining, fair enough, that's what it is, right? Visualization or imagining that I was projecting this energy out into space, out into the universe, out into the ether with the intention of a response. And I got one on multiple occasions with these orange orbs. So it's consciousness communicating with something beyond the brain barrier. It's leaving the skull. That was the grand realization for me through my experiences, was that, okay, so consciousness isn't restricted to the body. And once you go into that state of awareness, you start realizing, well, if it's not restricted to the body, when this body dies, consciousness will live on. The afterlife starts to become a lot more valid as a belief system. So, you know, these ideas start to come into your mind because you've been given some form of evidence. And truly, like I say, what's exciting is that we're beginning to get these connecting nodes between the spiritual intuitive information that we've had for thousands of years, but was never empirically evidenced, so not taken very seriously in science. That is now meeting up with the quantum physics, the biophysics, the deeper dive into our cellular structure that's revealing spooky connections between us and the energetic reality we're in. And that's basically the same thing as the mystic explanations, but with larger words, longer verbiage, more detailed mathematics, you know, the things that satisfy the modern human. But it's the same thing. And that's why I call Project Unity, Project Unity. I might not always be the most agreeable guy, and you know, I got a bit of a hothead. I wasn't calling it Project Unity to say, like, guys, we're all gonna hold hands and I'm gonna sing Kumbaya with all of you and we're all just gonna be buddies. It wasn't really like that, ever. It's more deeper than that. It's about a connection, a unification between spirit and science, between these two sides of the perceptual coin, bending over and meeting each other. I really think that we're on the precipice of that. And I think that my experiences with the orbs taught me to pay attention to that and to grow and learn, educate, inform myself. And the drive to set up a platform and be public was honestly just a deeper desire for that information to permeate further than just myself. And I don't ever think that I'm just right and that I know what's going on. I'm not one of those guys that will just say, oh yeah, this is it, this is the agenda, this is the this, that, and the other. No, not me. I won't do that to you, because I don't know. I don't even know what the orbs are. I don't know what the orbs are, but they're real. I know they're real. I know they respond to consciousness. I know they responded to positive states of consciousness. And to my knowledge, I was never harmed. They didn't do anything bad to me. So it's important that we understand these things through various lenses and have some nuance, especially with the government disclosure coming on, because I just think that they're going to try and drive us into a very singular narrative with the entire UFO subject. It was interesting to see David Grush mention the sentient plasma phenomena as a possibility. during the DC press event, which I was at. I attended the press event in Washington DC, and that was an interesting element of the press conference. But I have to say, guys, that, you know, this is where I get a lot of hate from people, because suddenly I go from the very interested UFO experiencer and researcher and someone who's interviewed so many people to a hater, and, oh, you're just jealous, oh, you just wish it was you on the press conference. It's like, dude, no, I fucking don't. Like, seriously, I really don't. But one of the things that I just don't like is the optics management. So, you know, you've got people like James Fox who are out there on X going, unprecedented turnout at this historic press conference. And like me and John Warner the Fourth, because I was there with John Warner and John Luke and John Majorowski, the John and Jay squad were out in full representation in DC during that press conference. And there was like 50 people max, and that's including the staffers who have to be there, like the aides to the congressmen and the senators, because there was Burchett, there was Luna, there was Eric Burleson, David Grush, you know, so there was a bunch of staffers there as well. It wasn't an unprecedented turnout. I'm sorry, I don't like this skewing of the optics where they'll take very selective photos and videos of the event and try and convince the rest of you that weren't there that this was some massive, you know, dude, it was on some tiny little patch of grass, not even in the main areas where people do press conferences, and there were bigger things going on. There was like a child's choir that was getting far more attention than this historic press conference. I just think we have to be careful of the optics management, because we're dealing with the US government and the intelligence community and the narrative operations that are happening outside of the UFO subject, regardless of just the UFO subject. There's so much going on right now in terms of narrative engineering, and there's no way it's not happening with the UFO subject. We know it is. I've pointed out many elements of that that have concerned me over the years. People who have positioned themselves to kind of become influential DC journalists on the UFO subject, or podcasters who are doing coverage for News Nation, it just doesn't seem right to me anymore. You know, I used to be very supportive of a lot of these guys, and I don't want to be naming and shaming. I think a lot of you know, like, the people I'm mistrustful of. But it's just kind of got to the point now where it's very repetitive, not much movement, just a lot of hyperbolic speaking. And I'm seeing it as more of an optics management thing than any sort of legitimate disclosure effort. Said that for a few years now. And this is coming from someone who was genuinely 150% supportive of the whole thing from 2017, very optimistic, and did a lot of coverage of it, got a lot of interesting interviews, and traveled around America and sat down with the CIA guys and the Los Alamos guys. And, you know, I've done the work, and I have put the hours in to have an opinion on where I think it's all going. And just seeming a little bit like they're trying to bolster the theater of it for everyone, so that it all seems more serious than it's actually being taken by the government, because the government's not taking it very seriously whatsoever, quite frankly. They got bigger things to worry about, like trying to pull America out of Iran without looking like idiots. So, you know, there's a lot more going on in the national security apparatus than just trying to discuss what the congressmen and senators are saying about UFOs. It's just getting to a point, don't you agree? Very repetitive, very cyclical. The most important element of the UFO subject for me, and I would argue that the most important element of the UFO subject for humanity, is the consciousness connection, because this is what provides us with a wider understanding of the potential corpus of intellect that's out there, this pantheon of potential intelligences that I think our most shamanic and most ancient ancestors were in communication with in a way that was far more advanced than what we're capable of. I was talking about this the other day when I said that, you know, I'm a deeply flawed human being. I'm just a normal guy. I've made plenty of mistakes, and I'm sure I'll make more. You know, I don't always think the right thoughts. You know, I am a flawed, fallible human being. But I was able to have these experiences with the orbs, right? So if I can do it, if just a normal, imperfect being, not fully pure, you know, like damaged from life and, you know, with all that madness that goes on in the mind, if that can happen to someone like me, then I have to imagine that our most ancient shamanistic ancestors, who are so deeply entangled with nature, so connected into, quite frankly, the purest of signals, if I could have these rudimentary experiences with orbs of light, don't you think that they probably were having direct communication? I would argue that it's extremely likely that they were having direct interactions and communication. That's where the ancient history thing comes in for me as well. It's the consciousness connection that leads back into the ancient shamanism, which of course is a consciousness connection, finding deeper levels of mind, deeper levels of perception. And the fact that this also leads to interactions with the other, with some form of other, I think it would be extremely unlikely that our ancient ancestors were not having profound experiences as well. So I think that there is a deep connection between the so-called UFO subject, which again is an umbrella. You know, you've got the classified aerospace, you've got the plasma orbs, you've got different various beings that people claim to have interacted with, ultra-terrestrials, inner earth beings, interdimensionals. You know, it's a whole umbrella of potential intelligences and situations. But the orbs and the consciousness connection and what our own ancestors have gone through and experienced, yeah, I think that's very deeply entangled and connected. And I hope that we get some form of answer from governmental channels, but I'm sorry, guys. Like, I'm really not... Why would we be optimistic about this? You know, taking... like I said, just stepping back from the UFO subject and looking at the wider picture of the world and the Western Alliance and the government narratives and on various subjects... why are we looking for answers from them? It just doesn't feel like it's going to happen. It feels like a lot of political positioning, a lot of ego, a lot of, you know, jostling for position to be the big disclosure guy. I'm not seeing it. Just to remind you, 2017 was almost 10 years ago, people. Almost a decade ago. That the New York Times put out their ATIP story and Lou Elizondo came out on the record almost a decade. Think about that. Do you remember him saying things like, it's a marathon, not a sprint? Oh, disclosure is just around the corner, it's coming next year. Since what, like 2020? Next year, 2019 even, I remember in 2019. It's now 2026, coming up on 2027. It's a long time, and I just think that we have to be realistic about what we should expect from the government. Especially during a time of incredible narrative operations and information warfare across the board, beyond just the UFO subject, but in general, across the board. So yeah, that's pretty much it. I just wanted to have a little ramble in the forest and talk to you guys and give you an opinion. I know it's been a bit slow on the uploads recently, but it's through no lack of work. I've got like 5 or 6 things that I need to put out. It's just that literally for about a week and a half, I haven't had access to my laptop because I'm uploading my ancient technologies episodes in 4K ProRes, like 250 to 700 gigabytes per file, up to Gaia, because Gaia's acquired 6 of the ancient technologies episodes, which is awesome. I did make a post about that, so just to make you all aware, it's a non-exclusive deal, which means that the videos will still be on my YouTube channel. No changes on my side. I don't like doing that, and I will never do that. I won't put things behind a forever paywall. So all the ancient technologies episodes will still be available on my YouTube channel forever. It's just that Gaia is now also wanting to acquire them as well, which is really great. And, you know, that made me feel pretty proud of myself. So, yeah, that's what I've been doing for the past week and a half, 2 weeks, is... uploading these huge files to Gaia, and I haven't really been able to edit anything or use my laptop properly, so that's why it's been a little bit slow on the uploads. But I've got Ancient Technologies Malta, another episode to come out, Ancient Technologies Peru, another episode to come out, Ancient Technologies Yorkshire, England with John Luke to come out, a very interesting interview that I've done with a man called Mauro Biglino, who is a translator who was formerly working with the Vatican in translating ancient Hebrew texts until he discovered that it was most likely about aliens, and then they fired him. Really interesting conversation with that guy. And lots more in store, because I've got plans this year. So yeah, don't worry. I haven't gone anywhere. Lots of things in the pipeline. It's just been one of those staggered months because I've had a lot of background work to do. But I hope you've enjoyed my ramble and walk and talk, and maybe you agree with me, maybe you don't, but I would just like to reiterate that I'm not in this for any agenda, really. I'm just out here doing my thing and trying to figure it out alongside of all the rest of you, and I just happen to film myself while I'm doing it, you know? That's the only real difference between us, I promise. I'm not trying to be special. I'm not trying to tell you I've got the answers. I don't have them. I'd like to think I've got some good questions, though. Take it easy.